2011 is young, but already proving to be an eventful year for writer Nick Flynn. In March, filming begins on a movie adaptation of Nick's first memoir, Another BS Night in Suck City. That's the book that took its title from a phrase Nick's dad used to describe his life as a homeless alcoholic here in Boston. Robert De Niro will play Nick's dad. Can't wait. Nick writes about coming into contact with his dad at the homeless shelter where he worked. He also writes about trying not to be like him. This week, Nick's follow-up memoir, The Ticking is the Bomb, comes out in paperback. Like the first book, it has a lot of disturbing stories. In fact, some of the content of this next segment may be too much for young children. Nick writes about his father falling off a ladder and adding possible brain injury to his alcoholism. And he writes about his mother killing herself, a time Nick Flynn calls bereftitude. As if these benchmarks aren't upsetting enough, Nick is also, after years of flailing about in relationships, about to have a baby. And he's been asked to travel to Istanbul, Turkey, to bear witness as a lawyer questions former Abu Ghraib detainees, including Amir, the naked man in those photographs being dragged by a leash by American Lindy England.
When we get to the photograph of him being dragged by the leash, he stops. "I remember that night," he says. "I remember everything." And then he tells us the story. The lawyer never takes her eyes off his face as he speaks, softly repeating, "And then what happened? And then what?" as he tells of his body being dragged from room to room, cell to cell. It is only a year since Amir was released from prison. The soldiers called the day of his release the Happy Bus Day. "Tomorrow you will get to ride on the Happy Bus," they told him. Today, a year later, Amir shakes his head as he looks at the photographs of himself from that time. "I cannot recognize myself as that man," he says. "Can you?"
Just as, at the end of the book, we don't recognize Nick Flynn, only he's been changed for the far better by the birth of a little girl. We spoke to Nick Flynn when The Ticking is the Bomb was first published and began by asking him about Amir. What was it like for Nick to be in the same room with detainees that, for many Americans, had just been figures in hoods?
Yeah, that was really an amazing experience. And that was actually the transformative experience for me in writing the book and even in my life, to sit across from someone and have this sort of human exchange. You know, their full humanity was revealed to me. You know, what was done to them was done in my name. You know, I thought if these guys could travel through America and just sort of like meet in town halls and people could get to meet them, it felt like it would transform our perception of what we're doing in the world and the consequences of what we do.
What was your obsession with torture, you know, such that you would search out these lawyers, you read about them, and then they asked you to go with them to witness them interviewing these detainees? The pictures were insidious. We were, many of us, compelled by them, found them compelling. But what were they for you?
You know, it had to go back to, that's why it became a memoir, I think, and rather than a piece about Abu Ghraib, because I had to sort of look into my own subconscious and see what it snagged on in my subconscious. And it turned out, as could have been predicted in advance, that it had something to do with my mother and with my father. Both had some relationship in some either tangential or actual way to this whole question of torture. My father, when he'd been in federal prison, had always told a story about being actually experimented on, which I never actually didn't put in the first book because it seemed too outrageous. And then in doing the research for The Ticking is the Bomb, things started to line up in a certain way where it seemed actually possible that this had happened to him.
How so?
Well, there's a book by Alfred McCoy called A Question of Torture where he details the CIA's 50-year involvement in developing the torture techniques that we saw in Abu Ghraib. My father talked about similar things happening to him, like back in the early 70s when he was in prison, federal prison. And the prisons that Alfred McCoy says were the sites of CIA experiments were prisons that my father had been in. So, you know, nothing is confirmed, but it was a very strange moment to realize that it's possible that what my father said had some basis in fact.
And then your mom, it's heartbreaking to read you, you know, every other chapter, circle back to your mom and a suicide note. We should say that your dad, prior to you reconnecting with him as a homeless man, he had pretty much abandoned the family. So you and your mom and your brother were sort of it. Where do you think she brought you to this issue?
You know, when I was going back into it and trying to figure out why I was sort of connected to this, I went back to her suicide note, which has a reference of a novel called The Story of O, which is a famous novel, which involves sadomasochistic relationships. And you know, it's a very different type of torture. Sadomasochism is a torture that, you know, involves consent, which is very different than state-sponsored torture. But yet there seemed to be some resonance between the two. So,
well, on the third or fourth page of her letter, your mom describes herself as the real story of O. And this is your roadmap. You know, you write, some maps are torn and folded improperly, but every family has a roadmap. And, you know, it's no wonder that you gravitate to homeless shelters when your father does, that you have a lot of relationships as your struggling single mom did, because that was your map. And it also seemed very wrenching for you when suddenly your map changes. You have a stable relationship and then, of course, the birth of your child.
Yeah, I guess it does seem that way. You are given a map from your family, and this is how one goes through life. And, you know, the map that my family had was imperfect. You know, some of the things did have to be reevaluated, and maybe I was misinterpreting them. And, you know, one of the maps was there was a strong line of addiction in my family through my father and my mother. And, you know, and then I picked that up. And, you know, at some point I had to decide to put that down, which is not something that's... That's not on the map. That's the white area off the map for me. Mm-hmm. So I had to sort of, you know, then you enter into a zone that's uncharted.
Well, and then there was something you were trying to get at to describe when your little girl is born. When you bought a house, it didn't do it. When you wrote a book, it didn't do it. But when you had this little girl, it did it, and it's being grounded. Before Lulu came into your life, you had a resistance to that word because you said it meant...
closer to death, maybe.
Yeah, being put in the ground.
That's right, yes,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, and then that changed.
Yeah, I didn't realize before my daughter was born actually how ungrounded I was and how that was how I went through life. I lived in a boat for a long time. I traveled. I moved around a lot. And her birth, her coming, has been and continues to be incredibly grounding for me in that I wake up every morning and... You know, there she is, and we go and spend a couple hours together, often before the sun comes up, and, you know, begin our day in sort of this meditative way sometimes. I like to think, even when things are a struggle, you know, these moments of struggle with children, it's still meditative in a way. You pay attention fully, and that, for me, has been very grounding.
Do you ever find yourself falling in a pit of, you know, seeing what your child is doing for you and wondering, even as I'm about to say this, it's like, oof.
You know, no, it's good to be uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, here it comes. And wondering, you know, why it didn't do it for your father. You weren't enough, you know, or your mother. And they tell us, you know, you can't be, right? But...
Yeah. Well, and I would never put that on my daughter, actually. I wouldn't, you know, want her actually to be the totality of my existence or to... You know, make everything right. That does seem like actually the burden to put on her. And you know, there's other ways that I take care of myself. And her, I try to make it actually more about pure pleasure or pure attention or pure being a father, whatever that means. You know, I'm learning what that means every day. It's not something that I had a map for.